Welcome to the Undefined Podcast. I'm Jared Palmer.
And I'm Ken Wheeler. Today we have a really special guest.
Sebastian McKenzie, creator of Yarn and Babbel, and a software engineer at Facebook.
Sebastian, you want to tell us who you are and what you do?
So my name is Sebastian. I currently work for Facebook on the WebCore team. We're a team that is under the React org, where many of the open source libraries are managed, like React and Relay and React Native. So previously, I've created Babbel as well as Yarn, as well as dabbled in a couple of other open source projects like Prepack and Flipper, which are both Facebook projects. So these days, I mostly work on internal tooling and libraries.
So what are you excited about in JavaScript right now?
I know I'm pretty enthusiastic about the consolidation that I see kind of happening in the ecosystem, primarily around TypeScript. Even if you dislike TypeScript, I think that you can still be excited around the consolidation of stuff. I think it's definitely a good move to see the ecosystem choosing de facto tools, especially because there's a lot of stuff that's kind of like outside of the gates of frameworks that like different framework communities can kind of consolidate on and then like share those tooling. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, I mean, Angular made that decision a long time ago.
Yeah, I'm unclear whether there'll be like that similar move in the React community, unless it's like very organic, and like when these sort of like organic changes tend to take longer than just say like Angular deciding to use TypeScript, because I guess like there's that trope that React is not a framework, except it sort of is. It'll be interesting to see.
All right, Sebastian, what is your favorite Babbel, either transform, plugin, or usage of Babbel?
It's the most interesting. It's probably the Babbel macros stuff. But that's not necessarily the thing that I like the most.
okay.
I don't know. The stuff that I think I like the most, the most creative stuff, is probably stuff like line coverage, mostly because it's outside of what Babbel is meant to do, which is kind of like the ES6 compilation stuff. But the most interest, I see the most interesting being doing that kind of like code coverage stuff. So we actually kind of do something sort of similar at Facebook, where there'll be like runtime profiling stuff injected into like certain functions, so we can kind of like get better performance data. So that's another really interesting use case. But I think that probably one thing about that I probably didn't see when I changed Babbel to like be this pluggable thing is that a lot of the plugins are kind of going to be stupid. They're just like going to just use like if I went back and did it again, I probably would have been a lot more restricted and being more of like a batteries included approach, which is, I guess, what Babbel 5 was in the first place. But adding like all these plugins, I guess, has kind of been required in a way. Like I was thinking back on it, and I think that for Babbel to have evolved like it did, kind of had to have made everything pluggable. And made it more generic. But I think I would have changed my strategy a bit in how I did it. Yeah.
I remember when it was 6 to 5.
Although I think it was only 6 to 5 for like a very short time. I think it was like, less than a year.
Yeah.
Until it got renamed.
I remember James converted one of my repos to 6 to 5.
What was he using before?
Nothing. It was just regular ass JavaScript. And he did that. And I was like, oh shit, thank you, man. I was this is fucking awesome.
Did you know the there was another name on the table actually for when we renamed 6 to 5?
Is that right?
Yeah, so there was Rosetta. So that was the other name. So they're both like related to languages. Didn't go with Rosetta because somebody pointed out that it's very similar to a word in German that means anus.
That's why I would have picked it.
That's absolutely the reason to pick that one. That's like the clear winner now.
I would have named the shit anus.
From henceforth, it shall be known as Rosetta. Right. Also, Rosetta plugin, it just makes it a whole much more funnier.
Like if I had a tool that I knew that like millions of people would use, I would just name it anus flat out just to troll everyone.
It's a good idea. Wait, is that available on NPM? Anus.
Someone has to have taken it.
It could be like one of the censored censored packages.
They're censored packages?
Yeah, there's like a list of like packages that are censored. So there'll be like curse words or whatever. It's actually funny. I think they used to be under Isaacs, the CEO or the creator of NPM's, his main account. So the way they implemented the blacklist was he would just publish a package. So you used to be able to go into his profile and you would see like thousands of obscenely named packages.
Nice.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I think I am squatting the NPM package called Dank though. So if you're ever looking for a name for a project, I'm more than happy to give that to you.
Yeah, Anus exists and has four versions.
Ooh. Oh, wow.
It's actually following Semver. This is incredible.
Oh, Rosetta.
Rosetta. I like it.
Yeah, it's also really close to like the Rosetta Stone software or thing that actually happened. So that was also another thing. Like it was funny because when we renamed to Babel, everybody kind of gave a shit because Babel is like a fairly generic word. Like there's a movie, I think starring Tom Cruise or something. And that was like on the first page of the Google search results. Now I think like if you search for Babel, we're at like the very top. So I kind of like, we proved those people wrong that it actually matters.
Fuck off, Tom Cruise.
It's okay. Yeah. Razzle, one of my projects, it was a adult male magazine in Britain for, well, we're in the 80s and stuff. So you look up Razzle.
Did you know?
Do not Google Razzle.
Did you know that before or after you picked the name?
No, I didn't know it before. I was like, like Razzle Dazzle Build System. Woohoo. I did not do my research.
Googled Razzle.
Actually, I realized why I remembered the NPM package dank was actually, I made it when we were thinking of names for Yarn. And I was like, something four letters. And like, because I thought typing in dank install would be the most like funniest shit ever.
That would be awesome. Little things like that makes your day so much better. So yeah. I wish we had more silliness in our ecosystem.
There was a Yarn Fieri command. One release at Xbox.
Tell me more about Yarn Fieri.
So there's like that Fieri meme, how it's right. In Babel or whatever. So I wanted to do something for Yarn. So I, in a local copy, added a Yarn Fieri command that when you would run it, it would print the ASCII art of Guy Fieri, except it'll have it animated and it would like have rainbow colors and it would cycle them. It's pretty cool.
Does this exist now in Yarn?
It doesn't. So I wrote it up and then I decided that I shouldn't have it, whatever. I deleted it. However, I forgot that we had a lib and a source folder. So the file still existed compiled in the lib folder. And there was a release done that actually includes that file. So if you go back through some Yarn releases, you'll probably find it. So it was only ever in one release.
That's a pin hard to that shit.
Well, somebody actually found it, which I was kind of surprised by, because it's just like a single file. You still have to like go and add it to like the commit, like the list of valid commands. But somebody was just like, I guess, going through all the Yarn source code, and they found it despite the fact that there was no code path that could actually hit it.
It's amazing what people will find on the internet. If you just put up code, they'll find it.
I would say like the best code review is just post code on the internet. Be like, hey, check out this thing I made. And magically, like, you know, hundreds of people will tell you about that piece of code.
And how bad it is.
Like, hey, man, you could have done this here.
Do you have any specific stories?
Well, no, it just happens all the time. Like, I'll be like, hey, this thing's neato. And then, you know, you just 30. Here's a neat way I figured out how to do this.
My favorite was, I think somebody would submitted a PR to like CoffeeScript, I think, that like replaced it with the compiled version in JavaScript.
Nice.
Oh my God. That's amazing. I like when somebody, when you have a project and someone somehow, some way decides it's a super good idea to self-promote their competing project in an issue.
Oh my fucking God.
What the fuck? It's like, hey, this is messed up, but if you try my library.
Oh, that actually reminds me. I'm not sure if you saw, there was a GitHub issue for like, I think it was there's an NPM module that checks if a file is like a binary. And somebody opened an issue saying, why did you create this package when this other one exists? And the package they were pointing towards was actually one that was like newer than the repo they were complaining about. So I guess
wow.
They obviously didn't do very much investigation. And the issue was like worded very like aggressively.
That used to happen all the time with all the React boilerplates. It'd be like, well, if you need this feature, just use this or just use my thing. Like, oh my God.
When I released that carousel, people would be like, you like this carousel? Well, check this out, this carousel. And I was just like, yo, back the fuck up, chief.
I think the worst is when like you can kind of tell, it's really obvious when somebody has made an alternative package, not because they actually are like having that problem themselves. They just want to like, they just want some like internet cred for doing it. Like trying to be kind of like get notoriety for a package that they don't really care about. And you kind of see like done with like a bunch of stuff where somebody just like take a concept of a package and rather than like contributing back, they'll like just create a new one and like go to war with it. Yeah, it's definitely not a part of the open source community, the open source ecosystem that I actually enjoy.
Heard that.
You're listening to the Undefined Podcast. I'm Jared Palmer, along with Ken Wheeler. Our guest today is Sebastian McKenzie, software engineer at Facebook and creator of Yarn and Babel.
So what you been working on lately, man?
Been working on some CSS and JS stuff. Kind of
really?
Going over all the existing libraries and what they actually do, if there's anything they could actually be doing better. I think there's a lot of stuff with like the CSS and JS that if we just have better tooling, then we're gonna have better libraries. Like the one that comes to mind is the ability to like write some CSS and JS and then like extract those styles out into like a static style sheet. I think there's some libraries that like kind of allow you to do that. I think style components and maybe some others have some ways of doing that, but they're like pretty naive. They don't like work 100% of the time. And a lot of the times that's like can be due to just the tooling not being good enough. Actually, not saying, let me reword that. The tooling isn't powerful enough. So you can imagine if you're defining some style in JavaScript and you reference a constant that's like in another file. Say you just have like a file with a list of colors. Tooling that like uses Babel or anything else generally just like works on that single file. So if they see like a reference to a variable in another file, they're not going to know what to do. And then it just won't work. There's a lot of pieces that kind of have to be changed to make stuff like that work in order to make like this approach to CSS in JS more tenable. Like it doesn't just go down to Babel. I mean, like it has to change like the way Webpack, for example, works, where given a file, you can't go on the assumption that if this file, other files that are changed can affect the output of this file. So it's like a pretty difficult caching problem and kind of like hooking up all the dependencies. But it's not really something that I see the ecosystem moving towards. Like I don't know if like Parcel or Webpack are looking into it.
So is this a problem in JS libraries because they're not really thinking about it at the right scope, right? They're thinking about it just like, oh, I'm going to be a library for a given framework, but realistically, as you just mentioned, it has to be done at the bundler level perhaps, or
yeah,
even deeper than that.
I don't know if the responsibility kind of falls on the people who are writing these styling libraries more than just like the tooling that they're all using isn't capable of it. The responsibilities kind of go, well, not the responsibilities, but the dependencies between all these tools get pretty deep in that like Babel would then need some way to tell Webpack that it relies on like this specific file, like declaring the compile dependencies. But then those compile dependencies could change depending on other things. So that kind of goes into some of the other stuff that I've been working on, which is what if all of these tools were just a single tool that had opinions, had like a single pipeline for like processing and doing everything. And when you wanted to add something, say to this magical compiler that you wanted to do stuff based on files, then you kind of can just like build it into the bundler and all the assumptions are already there because it's like a single system. And then you also get like a lot of performance improvements just based on like a single pipeline. Like I know Webpack currently has like a bunch of stuff where they'll like serialize stuff to strings and then reparse them. And while that parse time can like be pretty trivial, in aggregate, especially across like a really large code base, can really add up. And that inability is really bad. I mean, like the compatibility between all these tools, like it's going back to like ASTs, like Babel, for example, will mutate an AST. And that's terrible because if, imagine that you have a file and you want to transform it, then every single time you have to like pass it, then generate it into code. And if you want the AST again, you can't reuse the AST that Babel has because it's like change a bunch of stuff. Or say you want to like cache that AST, then you can't because it's like a mutable object. So I think that's like one thing that you would probably have to like change in Babel to make this like kind of performant end-to-end system. And that's like impossible with the current API. I mean, like if you've ever written a Babel plugin, it's like fundamentally mutable. I think that's probably the right choice in the beginning. However, once the plugin system was opened up, like all the internal API is the public API. So it's like, it's really easy to go from like an immutable API to a mutable one, but it's like almost impossible to go the other way around.
So for this theoretical, maybe not so theoretical, like all-in-one end-to-end pipeline, where do you draw? Is it like bundler, transform, and framework, or the framework part of this is still outside of the scope?
I think the framework part goes a bit out of scope. This is just like source code tooling. And that, that term is like kind of vague, but I think it even extends to stuff like a testing framework. Because if you can kind of like imagine we want to recreate Jest. What is Jest? So say it has its mocking system. It has its way of executing tests in parallel in different workers. And like if you have a system like this, building a testing framework is actually just like adding a bunch of pieces together. So for example, if you have if you want mocks, it's just the ability to tell the bundler to look at a different folder when it wants to resolve a module. If you have like these workers that are executing in parallel, well, if you've built like this end-to-end system, then you could have a worker library that can be used to parallelize compilation of files, which is useful in a bundler, but it's also useful in a test framework because you want to execute tests in different workers since you don't want everything to be single-threaded. So like all of these utilization, like different pieces, it ends up becoming like a test framework isn't, it's just boilerplate around like building all of these pieces together. And so, yeah, it's kind of like blurry where you draw the line because it can get like really big. And I'm kind of like been thinking about where do you draw the line? And is there a line to be drawn?
Right. Like maybe purpose-built is a good thing.
Yeah.
Right. Like does do one thing well, and that thing may include the framework part of this. Where are you in the process with this? Are you like starting out or doing it?
I've been doing it for a while. Unclear where it would go because it's like, it's really hard because in order to like prove that something like this is viable, you kind of have to build a lot of it. And when you're talking about something so big, it can take like a long time and a lot of like iteration. So yeah, I think I've been working on it for like couple of years, maybe like off and on, like rewritten different code bases, different approaches, every time. And I guess like the process has kind of been going on since I created Babel. Since like, I think one of the reasons why, along with burnout, why I like stepped down from working on Babel was that I didn't really like, I felt like in order to make the changes I wanted to Babel, I'd have to make it a completely different thing. And so I've kind of been taking like a lot of the learnings from Babel along with that. Cause you can imagine it's just like, if you're going to rewrite something completely, it's almost easier just to like make it a new project and give it a different name, especially if none of the API is the same. At that point, the only real benefit you get from keeping like the old name is just like the credibility. But even then you don't want to like, you'll probably taint that credibility by making something that is completely different. Yeah.
I know exactly what you mean. And like, even if you did change it, people would be so fucking pissed off because they were used to it. And then like, now it's changed.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
They're like, what the fuck? This is completely different.
Let's go to view.
Let's not go what? That fucking far. So is there like a sick CLI built out?
Sorry?
Is Guy Fieri involved?
Yeah, that's what I'm going for, really.
If any code sees the light of day, I'll make sure there's a Fieri command.
Fuck, is yes. This dank? Is this dank? Is this the dank package? Is this what we've all been waiting for?
I don't know. Maybe I'll do a release to the dank package, but unclear if it'll be this project or if this project even.
What is the all-in-one like name for it? Because it seems like it's more than one thing. So what do you call this now? It's more than a transpiler. It's more than a bundler. It's more than
toolchain. I guess.
Tool chain.
Yeah, that's the term that I usually see like thrown around.
Got any names you've been throwing around for that?
No, not really. It's also like really hard for something like this because if you have like all these different pieces, then if you just call it a name, are you gonna like call it the X compiler or the X linter or X test framework, whatever? And then like it can get kind of conflated. So maybe it makes sense to like call it the A project and then you call it like the linter B, for example, like you give everything a separate name,
like sort of how like with Happy all the different shit was named like Ren and Stimpy shit.
Yeah, but then like that also gets like super confusing because you're like looking at like a package that would have been obvious if it was just called linter, but instead it's like called something super weird.
Joy. You mean happy validation? No.
Heavens no.
That fuck is that?
Joy and Hoek, bitch.
Yeah. Well, I think they kind of did a similar thing with Babel, where there was the Babel parser used to be named Babylon. Then they renamed it to Babel parser. It's also that Babel minifier project that used to be called Babili. Yeah, Babili. Billy. And so I was renamed to the much more appropriate Babel Minifex.
Why wasn't that called Bilbo? Like, that would have been just like the Hobbit small. Like,
that's good. Yeah, I would be a lot more in favor of that name than Billy.
Sebastian, if you could be a rock star or a ninja, which one would you be?
Can you elaborate on those two options? What does it entail? Like, what sort of ninja and what sort of rock star are we talking about?
What part of the rock star's career, Ken?
Probably like at? Prime. I mean, I mean, like, as cool as being a fucking ninja is, I'd probably go with Rockstar because it's probably more fun.
Dude, I'm not so sure being a ninja is that lit. Like, it's, you know, you put yourself in danger every single day. You're like sneaking on top of rooftops and shit. Like, the occupational hazard seems significant.
It's pretty much all stealth kills.
And pretty like much. And right. Also, not sure what the like benefits are there. Benefit program is there, you know. You don't see many retired ninjas. See a lot of dead ninjas.
Yeah, what's the health plan?
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
401k included?
If you become a bad ninja, then you're just not a ninja anymore.
Probably pretty decent work from home policy.
And again, though, I mean, the same kind of applies to rock stars.
True.
The same could be said, but I feel like the rock star has more fun. I don't know why they use those terms to describe developers.
Oh, yeah, coding ninja.
I like Jedi. That's my favorite.
It should just be like, are you a big fucking nerd? Like, not just a regular nerd, but like a huge fucking nerd. Do you want to make a bunch of money? Why? I'll tell you what. I am a fucking nerd.
Well, what makes you interested in working for a company then? What sort of messaging?
Not dollar, yeah, dollar, yeah, pretty bills, much money. Yep,
no.
No, you know, what do I like in a company? I like when it's not like an adult daycare. Like, a lot of the thing in tech, like, these days is, like, they're like, oh, yeah, and we have fucking swing sets and juice boxes and shit. And I'm like, what the fuck, man? Like, what the fuck? What is your underlying motivation here to, like, infantilize me? So, you know, it's like no. Like, I want to go here and get my work done and fucking leave. So, any place where I can do that, I think is good. What about you guys?
I mean, I run my own show, so I invent my own.
Why work for Jared Palmer?
We are like a tribe of like a family, and that's probably the biggest selling point. Is that it's basically a tribe of people that are all into the same thing, and that's pretty dope.
Do I have to legally change my last name to Palmer to join?
Yes, but also no, you don't. But you do have to get this like brand inside of your pelvic region. But
I got it, and I don't even work for him.
Ken came to like a couple different of our tribal meetings. Yeah, I don't know, try to build out a bigger family. That's the plan, right? Plus, we don't have the same incentive structures because we are a family business to begin with. So like, I work with my dad and my sister, and so like, we just have a different incentive structure than the average like startup full of 23-year-old bros who are you know, trying to just blow money as fast as possible or trying to get other rock star developers to come on board. Like, that's not
fucking hang glide Thursdays.
Like, right, exactly. You know, trying to build a 100-year company, not trying to sell this shit in like 30 seconds.
What's Facebook like? Do you like just go there and do your work and leave, or do you like actually partake in all this like mini golf shit?
You can do it either way, I guess. Like all the teams that I've been on have very much been like, you come to work, you just get your shit done, and then you leave. I guess there's also like there's obviously like everyone socializes. But I think that at least the larger Facebook culture has kind of gotten over that like early startup-y feel. I think in the history of Facebook, it's always been less of that like playground feel than say Google. Like, I don't think there's in history ever been a slide, for example.
Yeah.
Are there 6-person bikes that all face each other?
Oh yeah. No. Well, there are bikes to like do intercampus travel, but that's about it. So yeah, I found it's fairly laid back. Kind of like come in when you want, leave when you want. The expectation is obviously just get your work done. I think
I've heard the food rules.
Food is good. I've been there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's a ton of different cafes. Like I think the building that we're in has like Indian, Mediterranean, like some vegetarian salad place. And then there's like a pizzeria, and then it's like a general cafe.
I think when I visited, I had like ribs.
Oh,
and like
nice. Was that from like the barbecue shack?
Yeah,
there's a barbecue shack.
Dude, I had like pulled pork and ribs, and just like shit all over my face.
I'd be like, fucking enormous if I worked there.
trying to land a gig. Like, this is when I thought I was gonna be a designer, but didn't get the gig. But yeah, no, I just like, I had ribs. It was great. I was like encouraged to have ribs. They were like, eat the ribs. So really, like during an interview, like, okay,
you're sitting there licking salt off your fingers. You're like, oh,
exactly,
barbecue sauce on your resume. So the place I'm at now, it's the first time I've ever been fed at work, right? Like they have like free food, and it's such a weird thing for me. And I don't know really how to approach it socially.
Are you above it?
No. I'm actually like really there for that. So when I go there, right, there'll be like a big ass fucking thing of like shrimp, right? And I've never had like unfettered access to free shrimp before. And I like looked at like my manager, and I could just have as much of the shrimp as I want. He's like, yeah, go ahead, man. Fucking go to town, as much shrimp as you want. And I was like, you do understand I'm gonna eat like all the shrimp. He's like, I can't even begin to describe how much shrimp I ate that day. Like, if there's something,
have you seen the just like in your pockets and shit taken home, like,
I'm like, oh, so much shrimp.
I'm literally imagining you eating 57 pieces of shrimp right now.
Oh, yeah, yeah, dude. There's like a taco day. You're just
taking the entire oh, tell me about taco day.
Taco day, dude. I go and I'll wrap like a soft taco around a hard taco and like make like three or four different types of tacos. And like everybody else is like eating like a fucking regular person, like an adult. You know, they have like their little fucking conservative little tacos with, you know, this and that. And, you know, I have this like, looks like a fucking 5-year-old got a hold of this thing. I'm like, it's a gordita. It's amazing. This shit is restaurant quality, bro. I'm having fun with that. I don't think I've...
Do you think people came to this podcast to hear us talk about JavaScript and stuff?
Yeah, maybe we should ask a little bit more, a little more JavaScript.
No, I think we're on track. Man, maybe.
So, Seb, you made like an operating system in JavaScript, right?
It was a desktop environment. I think I would always refer to it as, because I was afraid of like operating system geeks yelling at me how it's not actually an operating system. Like, it was just like a desktop environment, like a window manager, a lifecycle system for like managing these applications. That was pretty fun. I guess I had like the very ambitious goal of replacing like every single app that I use on a day-to-day basis. Like, if I look at my dock now, it's basically like, I just have Firefox, Terminal, Spotify, and like a text editor. And that's like, that's it.
Now, had you written your own browser?
Absolutely amazing.
So the project, basically what it was is I just ran it in Electron, and then Electron has, like a web view tag that you can just like have another web page embedded in it. And I used that web view primitive to, have different applications running in different, processes, since that web view tag would basically like in like an iframe, except an iframe is actually running in the same process. This would be running in a separate one, so you could actually have like multi-threaded apps, or like an app couldn't block another, which was like a kind of like a key thing to like this experiment actually working. So I had all that working, and like you could communicate like between the windows, which are running in a separate renderer, with the actual like host desktop environment, and like it was all written with React, and it worked pretty well. I think I eventually like. It was just overwhelming. Like, I think in the process of working on it, I got too distracted with all the tooling around it to be satisfied with what I was building.
Story of my life.
So where can we follow you on Twitter, and how can people follow you?
I'm on Twitter, SEBMCK. I guess that's the only interesting social media platform. However, I guess you can add me on... Actually, don't add me on Facebook, please. Just follow me on Twitter. Yeah, SEBMCK.
Thanks so much for listening to the Undefined Podcast. Our guest today has been Sebastian McKenzie, software engineer at Facebook, creator of Yarn and Babble, and overall pretty cool dude. Follow us on Twitter at TheUndefined.io or online at undefined.fm. For the Undefined Podcast, I'm Jarrett Palmer, along with Ken Motherfucking Wheeler. We'll see you next time.